The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Radio presenter Gareth O'Callaghan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Gareth. And you're actually in RTE Cork. You live in Cork now, and you've retired from radio presenting. And that is because you got a diagnosis of multiple system atrophy. And look, I feel kind of quite cold saying this to you, but it's a terminal illness.
Yeah, it is. I suppose it carries a fatal prognosis, which would be the more politically, I suppose, medically political correct way to describe it. But there's no getting around it. It's a killer illness, and it will eventually kill me unless something else happens in the meantime.
How did it develop initially, and then how did you find out? I mean, God, when you're told this, your world must just fall apart, doesn't it?
Yeah, it did. It collapsed. Looking back about 5 years, 2016, and I had been very stressed by a lot of work, financial problems, and I was feeling awful all the time, and I just put it down to chronic anxiety. I put it down to the fact that I was working long hours, I'd no savings, and the symptoms gradually crept up on me. I noticed one night, it was probably there for a while, but it became obvious that one of my toes was twitching very badly, so fast I couldn't even actually see how fast it was twitching, and it was annoying me, and I pressed it against the floor and it stopped, and then it started again. That was the first thing I noticed. Then it was sharp pain a couple of weeks later down the side of my foot. The pain started moving up my leg. Then I found my left arm, as in my left leg, that side of my body became quite sluggish, and there was a deep sort of almost kind of like a pain deep in the muscle right down the left hand side. And I thought maybe it was some sort of a mini stroke. And I tried to ignore it for as long as I could. And then I found myself tripping and dragging my foot. And it was a couple of people in work who would say, you know, you're dragging your foot. And I was falling when I would step up onto a curb. And then I fell out of the shower one morning. And then I started falling out of bed. And the symptoms gradually started adding up. I could almost lose count of what was going on. There were warm nights in bed when I would be freezing cold. And then there would be freezing cold nights in bed when the bed linen would be saturated from the perspiration. So,
and Gareth, had you gone to the doctor at any point in this?
No, I went to him initially because I had terrible bowel issues and I thought I had colon cancer. Now, I have to admit, it's funny how fellas in Ireland say I would be a bit of a hypochondriac. Mm. See, so he said, I don't think you have bowel cancer, but he said, I'm making notes of this, and he took blood pressure and he said, you have a very irregular heartbeat, which I've only just noticed. So that was the end of that. I went away. I was quite happy with that. But the symptoms continued, and eventually in February 2018, I decided, right, I had met Paula, my wife, a couple of years before that, and I think, you know, when you have a woman in your life and she starts saying, hang on a sec, this can't go any further, you got to get this checked out. So I went to my GP, who I know very well, and I sat in front of him, and he went through a whole clinical test, and he said, what do you think it is? I said, I don't know. I was afraid it was a stroke because it was the left-hand side of my body. And he said, no, I don't think it's a stroke. And then I said, I think it might be Parkinson's, because I had read up David Jensen, who many people might remember, Kid Jensen from Radio Luxembourg. There was a big story in the Daily Mail in the UK around about that time that he had been diagnosed with this. And I read all the symptoms that he described, and I suddenly could sort of put my name into where his name was. So my doctor did a whole load of clinical tests, and he said I would rule out Parkinson's. So at that stage, I was delighted. I kind of thought to myself, well, they're the two big things I'm thinking, and it's not cancer. So it's probably just anxiety. So he said, hold out your two hands for me and try and keep them perfectly still. And I noticed at that stage that they were both shaking and my fingers were twitching. So he said, this is something far more insidious. But he said, I'm not a neurologist. And he asked me, have you ever heard of Parkinsonism? And I said, no, I hadn't. So, of course, I went off and I looked it up that afternoon. And it's a family of neurological illnesses. There are four of them. And the reason they're called Parkinsonisms is because each of them begins its journey by mimicking the traditional Parkinson's symptoms. So you have very rigid movement. You've an awkward gait, as in the way you stand and move. You tend to shuffle, there's twitching, there's a lot of involuntary muscular movement. Then internally you would have issues with your bowels, with your bladder, with your swallow. And then each one of these kind of goes off on its own trajectory and it gets extremely serious then. So I looked up all four of them and I immediately eliminated three of them, and there, staring me in the face, I literally ticked off all of the symptoms, and that was multiple system atrophy. So the GP gave me a reference for a neurologist who said, yeah, let's start the tests. And he then, after about a month, said, I'm going to bring you into the Mater Hospital in Dublin for 2 weeks, and we're going to go through all of these tests again as an inpatient. So it just means we have all of the equipment on hand and we can send you if we need a second MRI, if we need a second CAT scan, if we need more blood tests. So during the 2 weeks in the neurology section, what they do is they do this really intricate process of elimination. They eliminate everything that they believe it's not. And they're finally left with this whopper of an incurable, very, very progressive and aggressive neurological disease called MSA.
And you mentioned your wife Paula there. So Paula and you hadn't been together very long when this bombshell is dropped into things. And I presume so this means that Paula is now in a situation where she is going to become a carer for you.
Yeah.
And that she has to make that choice and everything. And clearly she has made that choice, yeah?
Yeah. I remember shortly after I was diagnosed, I remember saying to her one day, you know, you should just go now. And you know, this is just so, so unfair. And I said, I suggest you should just turn around, keep walking, don't look back. And she said, look, I would have gone a long, long time ago if I hadn't made the decision to stay for good. So we'll face this together. So we're always talking about everything. And I think this has become a regular conversation with us as this thing develops and progresses. And yes, Paula will eventually become my full-time carer. But we're very mindful that there's an awful lot of living to do in the meantime. And this is something that I really keep reminding myself and her of, that it's important to keep things within the day because that's where the joy of life is, within the day. It's not next week or next month. I'm regularly asked, how long have you got? I have no idea. Every individual with this neurological illness, it develops differently, even though the end result is the same. And some days are good, some days are absolutely awful.
You see, I think a lot of us would think, like, we all know in an abstract level that we're going to die, so we'd manage not to think about it. But I think a lot of people would think that if you felt that it then becomes a definite thing, which is there somewhere, whenever, that's very hard to get over that, isn't it? Is that a battle every day not to just obsess on that?
Yeah, it is. You just hit the nail on the head. I think Most of us of a certain age will remember Nuala O'Fallon's interview with Marion Finucane, and she literally said that. What she said was, she said, you know, you're always reminded, people tend to try to help you feel good by saying to you, sure, look, we're all going to die. And my reaction to that is, that's very true, but we all live like we're never going to die. Mm. Whereas there's a big difference between somebody saying we're all going to die and someone telling me that's true, but I, as an expert, know what you're going to die of, and you have now begun that process.
Yeah.
So you kind of step out of the we're all going to die mentality, and you're now into that, as you say, something that can become a very obsessive form of living on a daily basis, particularly late at night, when the extreme pain and the nausea keeps you awake.
Yeah. Do you manage most days, though, to kind of, you know, as the fella said, focus on living rather than dying?
Yeah, I do. I'm one of these people who I never really had a problem with lockdown, because before lockdown, I was already kind of locked into this illness about 2 years before lockdown started. So I had become I kind of stepped away from the whole madness of the media world, and I moved to Cork. I absolutely love it here. And I think where we live, we have plenty of lovely country walks, and I'm surrounded by lovely forestry. So I find great peace there. And as I say to you, I think every time I'm reminded that there are awful things lying out there ahead, I pull myself back quickly, and I tend to kind of say, right, we have a couple of hours, let's head off to Kurrabinny, which unfortunately we can't do at the moment because the forest is outside of the Fife limit. But I remind myself, and I try to remind myself, just how wonderful today can be.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The joy of belonging in the present moment.
So you're managing that thing that we're all supposed to be looking for these days, that mindfulness of being in the moment. And you've written a lovely book. I must say, like, it's not an easy read in lots of ways, but it's a very rewarding read. It's called What Matters Now. You do talk in it about, you mentioned the stepping away from the madness of the media, but in a sense as well, Gareth, that was an ending for you, wasn't it? And I think it kind of, it took a bit out of you, didn't it? That you were going, okay, I'm no longer going to be on the radio.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, something as simple as listening to you now at the weekends, I kind of envy you because you're doing what I loved doing. And I know what goes into the show, and I know what's going on behind the scenes. And I really, really miss that, because I know how many people love listening. I know that they make a point of saying, oh, look, stick the kettle on, it's time to sit down and enjoy the next couple of hours. I do miss that, because I did it for 40 years, and it changes you completely, because it's not just a job, it's something that you become attached to at every level. Like, it emotionally, you're invested in it. And I think when suddenly you're told, look, the anxiety and the stress that's attached to live radio 6 days a week will take a huge toll on you. Anxiety is one of the many things they advise you to avoid completely if you can. It's not easy in this day and age, because what it does is it accelerates the progress of the illness. So if you can try and avoid as much stress and anxiety, well, then it's almost like you can keep the symptoms calmer. Whereas if you become extremely worked up and anxious and stressed, well, then what happens is everything just goes haywire. Mm. You end up with ferocious blood pressure issues. The whole central nervous system is breaking down. But the more anxious you are, the faster the system actually, you know, goes on fire and tears itself apart.
there's a lot of very warm texts coming in, Gareth, and people, one texter here, Owen, remembering as one of his all-time favourite DJs, brilliant, witty, articulate and so much more. There is a texter here which I'm going to read to you because I know that this is the case. Listening to Gareth and wondering if he connects his past abuse to his physical illness, if he feels there is a connection to trauma. And like, this might be tricky for some people to grasp, but you do think that there is a connection there, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And quite a few people who I have come in contact with who have neurological illnesses and also who have very serious incurable cancers, we've kind of floated this idea. And it began to kind of take form in my mind shortly after the diagnosis, that when you are sexually abused, particularly as a very young child, which I was when I was,
and Gareth,
11.
I'll just interrupt you to say that we won't be getting into details on anything, but we'll be talking about a sensitive subject here for the next minute or two. If people just want to be cognizant of that, okay?
Fully understood. And I think when you're a young child and when something like this happens, your childhood, that world you live in, that space you inhabit, which is a, it's a very metaphysical space. In other words, it's a dreamy, imaginative, educating place where you feel very free to absorb what you're being taught and what you're experiencing. And then suddenly this steps out of the darkness and it completely obliterates. It's like splitting the atom. It's like what they call bifurcation. It's almost like an enormous implosion that blows your world apart and there's nothing left. It's like all of that wonderful, treasured childhood has vaporized and you're almost like a stray dog, a small stray dog that is abandoned and thrown into a river. And you're fighting for survival, but you don't know what you're fighting. And you don't know what survival is because you're only 11. So what happens is the brain, which is such a delicate piece of incredible technology, that's hardwiring itself naturally, moving along from system to system, from year to year. And suddenly it's almost like somebody takes a blowtorch to it and goes boom. And this indelible burn, if you like, is left sitting there, smouldering away. It doesn't just stop, it just continues to smoulder and smoulder. And it's my belief that, of course, it's going to affect the intricate system that is inside your skull. Mm. It may manifest itself as depression, as cancer, but I also believe that it in my case, certainly, and I can't speak for this. There's no scientific proof on this, by the way. But I believe there will be in years to come. That if they're telling you to avoid anxiety because of this condition, because it will make it worse, well, the anxiety you experience for years after abuse naturally is going to cause extreme damage somewhere in your brain and elsewhere in your body.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I think people can see the sense in that. How are you now physically, Gareth?
I'm actually good, Brendan. I have really bad days. My nights are terrible. I don't get much sleep, and I'm taking medication, which kind of gets me off to sleep for a couple of hours. But then I wake, and the pain is just extreme. You can almost follow the nervous system from the stem at the back of my head there, the brain stem right down and as it moves out to the fingertips and the tips of your toes. So I'm taking painkillers. I take tablets to relax my muscles at night to avoid this restless leg syndrome. I take tablets to help my mind, my brain relax. But what I've also discovered is a new treatment that they're using now in places like Japan and South Korea, which is molecular hydrogen inhalation. And I just came across this quite by chance. It's never been used here. It's unheard of here. It's a frontline medicine in many of those countries. And it's used to ease and to cure the inflammation within the body. All disease is inflammation. And it's all based in the cells, trillions and trillions of cells inside us. So by we purchased this hydrogen generator from Shandong in China. There's a huge factory that makes them and sends them all over the world. And I attach myself to this. It's through a cannula. And I inhale it up my nose. I pull the pillows up behind me. And then I literally stick on a set of headphones and I listen to some music. And I do that for probably 2 or 3 hours during the night until the pain eases. So, and then daytime is my mobility is not as good as it was. I'm very cautious. I have to be careful about climbing stairs and getting in and out of the car and walking and that. I know a lot of people who are listening this morning who have this illness, and they are further down the road of progression than I am. And I just want to send them on my best wishes and my love this morning, and also absolutely to the wives and husbands who are caring for them and the children. But
absolutely. You know what? I think people will be kind of tickled to hear that in true Gareth O'Callaghan style, you have taken charge of this situation yourself, and you're doing what you can proactively as well, and finding treatments in Japan and everything. And you're clearly not taking this one lying down, if that's not the wrong phrase. Come here. You mentioned there about people further down the road, Gareth.
Yeah.
Do you have to think about that a bit in practical terms? Do you have to think about what the future holds as this progresses?
Yeah, I think some people say, don't be thinking about that, you know, and God bless, some people even say to me, sure, by the time you get there could be a cure for this. There won't be a cure for this for a very long time, because it affects 4 or 5 different parts of the brain. So you can't have one pill suits all in this situation. So you have to be conscious that you could slip in the shower. So you have to think, well, we're going to have to probably modify this, and we're going to have to do other things as well. And unfortunately, with the development of this, it's very similar to the later stages of motor neuron disease, where literally everything stops working. You can't communicate. And really all that you're left with is your mind. Your mind remains sharp. I remember a great friend of mine and of many of my colleagues in RT, Colin Murray. Colin had motor neuron disease, and I remember him describing the symptoms to me. That was a long time ago. And I kind of think to myself, do I want to be at a stage where I'm intubated and I have a feeding tube? And, you know, the human body reaches a stage where it says to you, I've kind of had enough. It's time for me just to be left, you know, to my natural end. And while medicine has progressed so much in so many brilliantly powerful ways, it has also progressed to the point where it can keep people alive beyond what I believe is fair. You know, quality of life is the most important thing that every single one of us is entitled to. And I think when you lose your quality of life and you realise that what goes with quality of life, your personality disappears, the person you were disappears, your ability to love the life that you were actively involved with is taken away from you, well, then I think you really have to consider, is there a purpose here for me to continue to live in pain, to continue to live in agony? That's something that I think there has to be a much, much bigger, wider, more proactive conversation on.
Okay. And listen, I hope you have a long time yet before those questions become too imminent for you. And you explained all of that so thoughtfully, still a brilliant communicator, Gareth O'Callaghan.
Thank you.
Can I say, it's great to see that hope and life have not been knocked out of you, and fight has not been knocked out of you by this. And so many people texting in. You may have think you had to get off the radio because of your anxiety, but so many people delighted to hear you on the radio today, Gareth. I'll just read one from Aideen, but this is emblematic of a lot of other texts. Delighted to hear Gareth on your show. Brings back happy memories of his years as our DJ for our local disco on the Navan Road. And radio, of course. Thank you, Gareth, for reminding us to live one day at a time. You're a huge inspiration. Gareth O'Callaghan, thank you very much. And the book is called What Matters Now, and it's published by Hachette Books. And Gareth, like everybody else, I wish you all the best in the time ahead, OK?
It's great to chat to you, Brendan.
Talk to you, Gareth. Thank you so much.
Thank
you too.
Thank you.
Email brendan@rte.ie.